kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
I was better till I read the chat. Ian said he was going to go get some ice cream and he's not going to bring any to us.
Well, he lives in New York.
That's beside the point. You can't be all like, I'm going to get a bowl of ice cream and then not fucking share.
You're so greedy.
My whole evening's ruined.
Do you know what would make your evening better?
Tell me.
A guest to join us on the show.
Yes, please.
Would you like that?
I do. Who do we got?
Joining us today, welcome back to the show, David Bruno of Mastiff Games. David, how are you doing?
I am spectacular. How about you two?
Well, we already covered that she's pissed about ice cream. So.
I'd be better if I had ice cream.
Sorry. Yeah,
do you have ice cream? Would your date be better with ice cream?
Cold pack it and mail it as soon as possible. We have the technology.
He's got the right idea.
Overnight it. Dry ice. Oh my God, Cole, say dry ice.
Dry ice.
That's mean. Or really cool.
That's like 75% of the show at this point.
It really is.
If you get stuck and don't have anything to talk about, just ask me to say something random. The more vowel filled the word is, the better it's going to sound.
Yeah, a lot of eyes work really well, or eye sounds.
I'll put some thought into this.
Like the band The White Stripes.
White Stripes. Yeah. They perform at 9, I hear.
Oh, man. Oh my Lord. So, Mastiff Games. Lots going on with Mastiff Games lately.
Oh, my gosh. Is there ever? We just released, 2 weeks ago, Arcade Islands. I think you guys talked about it in the last episode. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So that was a collection of games, 33 games, mainly focused on, you know, parents, kids style games. That was released digitally on Xbox One and PS4. Then we just announced a release date for the Thai-inspired horror game Home Sweet Home yesterday, which will be dropping on Xbox One and PS4 on October 9th, with a physical version coming to GameStop on the 16th of October.
Nobody told me you guys were making Home Sweet Home. I've been sitting here looking forward to this, and Joe didn't say, oh, we're interviewing the Home Sweet Home guys.
Surprise.
Fucking Joe.
You're the one who says that you do your homework and check out websites.
I didn't today. I'm old and tired, okay?
Not today there.
I'm old and tired, and I don't have ice cream. This whole day is just shit the bed. But it's a little better because I'm looking forward to this game. And so this interview just went from, like, 9 to 12 in awesome factor.
Well, yeah.
David, are you upset that you were only a 9 to her?
I know, before? What the heck?
That's some bullshit.
I was tired.
That's above and beyond my expectations.
I was tired, and I also need to apologize because I have some anxiety, because I need to apologize for this. When I did the interview, or did the review for your guys' game last week for Arcade Islands, I made a mistake, and I said that I thought some of the games wouldn't play unless they had 2 players. And that was a fuck up.
Unforgivable.
Yeah, and that was a fuck. And I feel bad for, like, I felt bad all week because I have horrible anxiety. So, like, that's gonna haunt me for the next 6 months. But I do want to apologize because I did goof, and I don't like to do that during.
Not a problem at all.
That's a huge problem. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's unforgivable.
Never mind. You need me back because I talk funny.
Yeah. So it's Arcade Islands. We just talked about Home Sweet Home, and then also have Heavy Fire lined up for October. That'll be dropping digitally on Xbox One and PS4 on the 16th as well, with a bit of a surprise physical. I'll save that for later. We got some news about that, and something else too, but that'll be next week. You'll see what's coming. And we also have Pool Elite coming probably early Q1, Q2 next year, which is an online pool and billiards game, probably the most comprehensive one to date, very focused on online gameplay and matchmaking, player versus player, player versus computer, player versus player locally online. It's just a massive online pool game. And then we have another one that we have not announced yet, so a super secret title coming. That'll be announced soon.
Is it going to be a console release of Gurren?
It will not be a console release of Gurren.
I'm still waiting for that.
I can assure you it will not be a console release of Gurren. Though, I mean, we do have that Kickstarter like milling around that we never really got a chance to set to, you know, pull the trigger on and set live. Hopefully maybe we'll get to that someday. Because that would be really cool to see a physical 3DS version.
I would still love to see it hit Xbox and PlayStation as well.
That would be awesome. I'd be all for that. I mean, it is on PSN, but it's on, what is it? I think it's PSN or PSP Vita, maybe? I forget. It's been a while. And you can always play it on Steam and use Steam Link and play on your couch or whatever if anybody still uses Steam Link.
I don't know. I'm not much of a Steam gamer.
Sadly.
I love my consoles.
I have too many damn Steam games. Like, you see one game in a bundle, and all of a sudden you want that one game. Now you have 10. Like, damn, am I ever gonna play these?
And
like
then you cats. See. Hey, listen. I do not have a hoarding problem with cats.
Have you a hoarding problem with games?
Oh yes, very much so. Uh-huh. If anyone has ever watched the stream of the show and seen the room behind me, they know that I have a problem hoarding games.
Man, you know what I miss? Room of Dooms. Like, do you remember those when, like, in video game magazines, when they, like, have collector, like, corners and, like, Room of Doom, and it would, like, show people that, like, walls and rooms just filled, like, floor to ceiling with games? What happened to that?
I don't know, but I would probably be in the running to be featured on one of those.
Yeah.
The way my collection's going now, too. Yeah, same here.
I have problems. So we should probably start at the top with all the games that you're putting out and have put out. Arcade Islands just released recently. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Yeah, the elevator pitch. So
yes.
At its crux, at its core, it is 33 kid and family friendly games for up to 4 players. We've kind of gone back and truth be told, I mean, we started out with Party Planet on Switch, last October, November. Just because it was kind of a revamping of Party Planet. So we added a few games. We've completely redone the metagame. There's a metagame aspect. We've redone the whole like interface. So you're going into the game now, instead of kind of scrolling around a planet, you're actually playing across different islands. You're earning, so similar to if you've ever played like a Peggle or a Candy Crush style game, you know, you progress across different lands and different areas. New areas open up as you perform better in certain games or certain levels. There's kind of a collection, like I was saying, a metagame aspect to it. So there's a collection aspect. So if you earn 3 stars in any given game, then you unlock treasure. And that treasure can be viewed from the treasure hut from the main menu. And then you look at the treasure hut, you see different little, it's like a kind of like a little cozy room that gets populated with kind of trophies or treasure, if you will, from the different games, kind of like a representative little avatar icon that shows you kind of like how long you played, gives you a little bit of basic information, how long you played, how many games you played at that, your high score, so on and so forth. So it's a real fun kid family friendly game. Something if you know, if you're a parent, if you're busy, it's something you can stick your kids with and not worry about them, you know, being exposed to violence and mature themes on TV or other media. Or if you're looking for, you know, if the console is yours and, you know, PlayStation, Xbox are more of core gaming kind of consoles, mature gaming consoles, then it's something you can actually use to play with your kids and kind of bring the family in.
Cole, you played with your kids quite a bit, didn't you?
I did. This is now my new method for having them resolve disagreements. I'm like, go ice hockey it out and just figure it out.
Ice hockey or air hockey?
But it's an effective method for getting everybody quit arguing. I used to use rock, paper, scissors, but this is more competitive and less luck based. So much to the 5-year-old's chagrins, but
yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, something you can reward kids with. I mean, it's back to school time also, so yeah. You know, give them something, don't stick a tablet in front of them, and, you know, play a game with them.
My kids are actually pretty hardcore gamers anyway, even for little kids.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last episode, number 1, I think you called her. She's the oldest. She's the most hardcore gamer.
Yeah, she wants to be a game developer. And then number 3, she's only 5. but like she can play Super Meat Boy and get through levels.
Dang, so she's that's intense.
She's a little more advanced than most 5-year-olds for game skill. But this was a game that they really enjoyed to play. They were actually playing it again over the weekend, but we have a rule that they're not allowed to play games on school night. So they haven't got to play it anymore this week, but they probably will over the weekend again. They can play it in their room on their, yeah, they have their own Xbox and they can play it in there and just bash each other's brains out in whatever way possible without having to actually worry about there being real blood on the floor.
Or on the screen, mind you.
Or on the screen.
It's a pain to clean.
Yeah. It was funny. You could just hear them from the other room just giggling and having a good time. And I didn't have to worry that they were, you know, seeing anything particularly violent or problematic. It was good to just be like, yeah, go play that and not have to worry about getting on my account and approving them to play a game because it was already kid friendly.
That's awesome. That's perfect.
You mentioned the game started off as a Party Planet on the Switch. I did want to thank you for sending us a physical copy of that to review with some goodies inside. I am still sporting the sunglasses that you sent along.
Oh, the Stunner shades, yeah.
If anyone is watching the stream right now, that is where the shades came from. So thank you for those. But how did it go from Party Planet to Arcade Islands?
Well, I mean, I think we went out with Party Planet. We kind of learned a few things from that release and then kind of just adapted. And we kind of had an idea that we were going to push this out, Party Planet, out to PlayStation and Xbox eventually after the release of Party Planet on Switch. So we kind of took what we learned from the release of Party Planet and applied a few different things, went back to development and kind of talked internally, figured what worked well, what didn't work, and just applied them. And I think we came out with a better game for it. And it was definitely a learning experience, and I think it turned out for the best.
What kind of changes were made?
So I was saying the treasure hunt, it's entirely new. The whole metagame aspect of collecting treasure. There's online leaderboards now, so you can compete with friends locally or friends online. And one thing I think is really cool about the leaderboards is, you know, so many games have leaderboards, but they're never really presented in front of you. You kind of need to go out of your way to find the leaderboards or check the leaderboards. And what I found when I was playing Arcade Islands that I loved is the leaderboards are pretty much right in front of your face on the side of the screen. So it really encourages competitiveness in terms of, you know, scoring. And then when you do reach a high score, you complete all the games on an island. If you have the high score, the overall high score, then your avatar gets displayed and you become the quote unquote ruler of that island. So there's like a little banner with your avatar on that island. So saying that you're the ruler of that island. So it just adds like a little bit of an ownership and fun feel to the game for kids or for competitive adults. But, so we added online leaderboards, 3 new games, a whole new metagame, the collection aspect, as well as a whole new format for traversing and playing the games through islands rather than a carousel around a static kind of planet.
You guys went all out in making sure it was an improved experience.
Definitely.
Yeah, I love the whole King of the Island aspect going on. I am the king of, I think, 2 or 3 of them. And every time that I see my name drop from the king of an island, I burn inside this seething hatred for our friend Scott Smith Carnage, who seems to be on top of all of the leaderboards anymore. So
is that who I'm competing against? Because I swear there's like one person who's just dominating all the games.
Yeah, friggin' Carnage.
Okay,
did Carnage take over all the... I have a mission. Because when I was playing it for review, like, we would play and try to get 3 stars, and then I'd see the leaderboard pop up, and it would say that Carnage had more score than me. I'd be like, hold on, E, we gotta play this again.
Yeah, so I mean, the leaderboards in the game are really effective because they're right in front of you, and when you scroll across to a new game, you know, it populates the leaderboard for that game. So they're really effective and fun.
What are some of your favorite games from Arcade Island?
Oh man, well, of the new games, Laboratory Work, which is that top down twin stick shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the sucker for shooters and shmups and twin stick shooters, so that's up there for sure. Another one is the Bouncing Fish game, where you're kind of like you're just swimming around in a tank left to right, bouncing off the walls and avoiding obstacles like spikes and grinders and landmines and pufferfish and sea urchins and stuff. I don't know why, but I think that's just super addicting. And probably Fennec Fox Tower, the one that's like the endless climber. Mm. I think I might still have the high score on that one.
That one is stressful.
The water rises so fast. I mean, like, you can't slip up.
I've never been good at games like that.
You start off with it, and you're like, oh, this is easy peasy, and then the water is just, like, right there up your ass the whole time. You're going, why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me also of, like, the, I don't know if you ever played the original Contra. Like, there was a, like, the cliffside stage. I don't remember which stage it was. It might have been, like, the third level.
Yeah, going up the waterfall.
You're climbing up, and if you're playing local, like, multiplayer, like, two players, if you leave somebody behind, if you jump too high, they can fall off the screen. Mm-hmm. It's like grief kill the person who's trying to help you. So that kind of happens if you're playing 2 to 4 players in Fennec Fox Tower, where you can actually accidentally leave somebody behind if you're climbing too fast.
Oh, boy.
So you really want to exercise teamwork. But you can always bring them back because there are power-ups and like you'll see like a heart that revives a player.
Yeah, there was a lot of number one, slow down, you're leaving me in the dust.
My brother and I got like, so many fist fights as a kid with Contra in the waterfall stage. He would just never wait for me. It's like, David, wait, I'm younger than you. Please stop being a dick. He didn't care. He didn't care.
And you never got the spread shot weapon either. You always
seriously, I was stuck with the fire weapon that did the stupid little swirly attack. Like, come on. I hated that gun.
But then as you get older and get more skilled at gaming, you're like, oh, damn, the laser's pretty dope.
Oh, hell yeah, laser's dope.
So, spread shot and laser.
Yeah, the moral is Contra's an awesome game. Now. Yeah.
Sorry, back on topic. But those are probably my three favorites. So, Laboratory Work, Fennec Fox Tower, and Bouncing Fish.
Nice. I struggle so much with the tank game. I forget the name of it, the top-down tank game.
You know, so do I. I'm not going to lie.
I am so bad at that game, and I don't know why.
I think once I get familiar with the controls, I think I'll get better. Because most tank games usually use one stick or one control for each track of the tank's wheels, or whatever you want to call them. So this one, you're actually using the D-pad or the stick to go left, right, up, and down. So I think that's what might be confusing to some players who have played other tank-style games.
I think the thing that throws me off is I'm always expecting I hit left to turn left and hit right to turn right. But this one is more directional, where if you're holding up, your tank starts turning up. And that's what throws me off with it.
Yeah, exactly. You'd think it would control more like a tank. Like if you're holding like forward, you're going to turn right. If you're holding down, you're going to turn left or something.
Oh, man. Still an awesome game, though. I really, really enjoyed Arcade Islands. Home Sweet Home, though. I know Cole is excited about this one. So, yes. Cole, what kind of questions do you have about Home Sweet? Actually, first off, give us the elevator pitch.
The elevator pitch for Home Sweet Home, huh? So, very Thai. First off, it's developed by YGG, a Thailand developer. Developer kind of almost by accident, really. They're first and foremost a very high-end production, like commercial advertising house. So they make, if you've ever seen, I'm not sure if you have, but if you've ever seen a Toyota, a Nissan, a car commercial that uses like high-end CG and such, they that's pretty much their forte. That's what they do. Hmm. One of the guys on the team is really, really, really big into horror. He loves Silent Hill and Resident Evil and horror games, horror films. And he wanted to make a Thai-inspired or Thai-themed horror game. So they kind of collectively pulled together. And generally, when you're developing a game, you start off with programmers. Then you find, you know, your composers, you find your riggers, your level designers, your artists. So they wound up doing the complete opposite, where they had all the artists, and they needed to find programmers. And initially, what a lot of people probably don't know yet about Home Sweet Home is it started off as a mobile game. So they went about... They outsourced for programmers, found programmers. They started putting everything together. The game was in development for mobile for about 6 months, and then they entirely scrapped it. They just weren't satisfied with it. It's like, you know what? This doesn't contain the look and feel and the direction that we really want or that it deserves. They scrapped it after 6 months of development, started fresh, and I mean, kind of using the same themes, the same lore, and developed it for Steam. So it was released on Steam last fall in 2017. had a lot of good pickup. I mean, there's a bevy of, if you want to spoil it for yourself, there's a bevy of YouTube walkthroughs and Let's Plays. And but I would recommend, if you want to check it out, there is a demo available on Steam right now. Scarier than hell. So very rooted in Thai mythology and lore and beliefs. So to give you the summary of the story, you're playing as a guy named Tim, a middle-aged man named Tim. Tim's wife goes missing prior to the story kicking off. So she's been gone for about two weeks or so, say. He's just kind of on a bender. I mean, he's really depressed. He's at his wit's end. He can't find his wife, can't figure out what happened to her. So one night after, you know, a bender, he wakes up and he's not in his home. He's in a completely different area. But unknown to the, you know, unbeknownst to the player at the time, he's actually, he awakens in the spirit world. So he's trying to piece together clues about where he is, where his wife went, and trying to avoid spirits, evil spirits that are hunting him. These spirits are based in Thai mythology and beliefs. So kind of where you would go in the afterlife, or what. So your actions, it's kind of karma based. So your actions in the real world will dictate where you go in the afterlife. And so he's encountering a lot of these spirits that basically did wrong in their physical world.
That sounds really cool.
It's creepy as all hell.
I am so enamored.
I mean, I've learned,
like, this is my jam.
just by playing the game, I mean, I've learned quite a bit about Thai mythology and lore and beliefs. It's really cool, and I hope players will, you know, pick up a few things about the culture as well. Like, if you do harm to elderly or your parents or something, you could come back as a preta, which I don't know if you've seen any of the screenshots or the video. A preta is a very big, big, tall, lumbering creature with like a pinhole size mouth. So it's very angsty and angry, and it can't feed or feast or eat, and just spends its life walking around moaning and you know, hungry. So you'll wind up as one of these creatures.
I don't want to wind up like a creature.
So kids, you know, listen to your parents.
What was that?
But I say, so kids should listen to their parents and behave their parents.
Yeah, freaking kids.
Yeah, it's the first in a series, so it does end on a major cliffhanger. But two and two will pick up from there. I can't say much more about two.
Oh. Is two already on Steam, or is it development still?
It's still in development. The developer has teased two, the sequel, but we haven't said much about that yet, or who knows when or who will, you know, pick that up.
So, Cole, what kind of questions do you have about this game?
I was just wondering how you go from making a game like Party Planet and Arcade Islands to publishing something like Home Sweet Home.
Yeah, like, exactly. It's
because, you know, you have to get on here and preach about the family-friendly aspect of Arcade Islands, and then you're like, by the way, now you're going to be reincarnated as a Thai demon monster.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Mastiff's been around for about 16, 17 years now, and I think this is probably our current 2018, 2019 slate is probably the most diverse slate that we've ever had. I mean, there's a military action shooter, there's a horror title, you know, the kid-friendly party style game. I mean, it's, and then a sports billiard style game. You know, it's so, we're just all over the place, which is great. I mean, it's great to have variety. But yeah, you nailed it. I mean, going from Party Planet Arcade Islands to Home Sweet Home, I mean, the two couldn't be more opposite, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. But me being a big, big horror fan myself, I am super excited for Home Sweet Home. Like, it feels so good to be working on a horror title again. I mean, the last horror title I think I probably worked on was Deadly Premonition, Director's Cut with Rising Star and Swery.
Oh, and you worked on that?
Yep.
Nice.
Well, to the degree of, you know, PR and marketing stuff, but
yeah,
none of the fun programming and developing stuff. Swery is the mastermind behind all that.
We have a question from the audience in the chat room saying, how many different monsters are there in Home Sweet Home? And are there going to be choices in the game that determine the ending, or is there just one ending?
It is fairly linear. So it is very narrative, story-driven, and it is linear. So you're not going to, if you miss a pickup or something, you're not, you know, SOL, you're not going to miss out on getting the good end versus the bad end. So one ending, in terms of how many evil spirits, you'll encounter, I believe in Home Sweet Home, there are four or five. Two, without giving too much away, two will pose major threats. The other two are almost kind of like your, I want to call them search, or like watchdogs of sorts. I don't want to give too much away. But about four or five different evil spirits you'll encounter in the game.
Nice. For someone who is kind of averse to horror stuff, what would you say to convince them to try this game?
I think they'll love the story. I mean, if you're scared and if you're scared easily, I think it's definitely something that moving from PC to console, it opens it up to a shared experience. Usually, when you're playing PC games, while generally you're sitting at you're behind your computer screen and monitor, and it's a solo experience unless you're playing online. Something like this lends itself nicely to that shared couch experience. So if you're with somebody, it kind of eases the stress of being, terrified, or it enhances it, and it's more of a fun social experience. But definitely the story is really, really engaging and really interesting. I think that will hopefully draw some people in on its own merit.
Nice, because I'm not huge into horror stuff, but my wife loves it, and this might be something fun for the two of us to play together.
Yeah, because I mean, it's certainly not like I don't want to shots fired at Michael Bay, but it's not like not an American story. It's not like a Michael Bay film where it's not like, oh my gosh, we should totally do this, and here's why. It doesn't put the story right in front of your face. So you'll pick up, you'll hear radio. There's radios in the game. You'll come across, and you can listen to certain excerpts or new police reports that kind of elaborate on the story. And you'll find like newspaper clippings and diary entries from your missing wife, and you start piecing together who's who in this game, and what they did in their previous life, and what they what's become of them in the afterlife. So it's really interesting. It gets pretty dark, but it's very interesting.
Is the story fairly definitive, or is it one of those where like it can be left up to interpretation to the player?
It's a good question. There are some unanswered. There are some things that go unanswered, so those will be kind of left up to interpretation. But with some of the characters, you will kind of come to a conclusion if you're following the story on what happened to them. Some of the stuff is kind of in front of your face; other things, not so much. It won't hold your hand through the whole story. It's not gonna, like I was saying, it's not like a Michael Bay film where it's not dumbed down for audiences. It's definitely well written and well told.
Nice. I'm very much looking forward to this one. Cole, did you have any other questions, or should we move on?
Well, there was one more in the chat about whether or not it was more of a puzzle walking sim, or do you actively fight to fend off?
Didn't even notice that one.
Walk-sploration. We don't say walking sim here.
Walk-sploration, that's awesome.
or do you actively fight to fend off the monsters?
Yeah, I've heard that in more than one instance now, like walking sim. And I certainly don't think it's a walking sim. To me, like a walking sim is more of like a walking adventure style game, and that, for me, conjures up games like Mist, or is it the Edith Finch game? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are more walking adventure style games. This is definitely more stealth horror. So if you played Alien Isolation, like that, okay. Only you're not going to get a Glock or a flamethrower or a chainsaw. You're not going to break a spinning red box. So it's certainly not like that. I think it draws itself, or does a really good job of providing not only mystery, but stealth and almost action to a sense, to a certain degree as well. You can fend off some of the enemies in the game, but you're not going to be able to fight them in a traditional sense, where I'm not going to be, boxing them or stabbing them or shooting them.
So there's no combat.
I wouldn't call it a walking sim by any means.
I'm kind of getting like Soma vibes, whereas you have to try to just not get caught.
Almost sort of, yeah. I mean, if you do get caught, you do have a chance to defend yourself.
Oh.
Granted, you'll be pretty low on health, and you'll want to run away or hide, or do what you can to get the hell out of there. But one of the creatures, though, or the enemy, is the spirits. I'll just say the Preta. If you do get caught by him, there's no coming back from that. I mean, he will mash you into the ground like cat food on a hot day. Like, he will just decimate you.
That's a new saying. Cat food,
right?
Smash like cat food on a hot day.
Well, wet cat food, I should say.
I like that.
I thought I had good redneckisms, but that one was pretty good. Damn. I'm going to have to put that one in my repertoire.
Is David an honorary redneck now?
Yeah. How do you say fore truck? Fore truck? You broke up. You got to try it again.
Did you say Ford truck?
No. Far.
Fire
like
truck.
Fire.
Fur truck.
Fur truck? Fire truck?
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. First time. Yeah. Fore truck.
Fur.
I don't know. We will have to work on him a little, but he might be able to become redneck.
I'm showing redneck potential. Sweet.
Yeah.
We'll get you there. We'll get you.
But yeah, definitely excited for it. It's available for those who want physical. It is a pretty limited run. I don't want to call it a limited edition, but it's a pretty small run, to be honest. So if you're, you know, a collector and you want a physical edition, I would definitely urge you to pre-order at GameStop as fast as you can. That sounds so seedy, but it's true. So want physical, get on physical while you can.
Is it going to be physical on both platforms or PlayStation only?
Yeah, for the Xbox fans, I wish it was physical on Xbox, but physical on PS4 only at this time, and exclusive to GameStop.
Oh.
So that's and why you got to pre-order at a GameStop.
No Best Buy for you, Joe.
Yeah, that will come with PlayStation VR included, too. So you have the base game, and you have the VR edition of it, too.
Oh, no, VR? Oh, shit.
Yeah, we didn't really touch on that, did we? Yeah.
Joe is streaming this shit now. He didn't know it yet. But he is streaming this shit.
Oh, God. I'm going to be...
You have a PlayStation VR headset, then.
I do. I haven't hooked it up since we moved, but I'm just sitting on the thing, waiting to... This might be the reason to bust it out.
It was the first... Home Sweet Home was the first game I played in VR. Man, that was a happy mistake. It was scary as hell.
that's a pretty harsh way to throw yourself into VR.
Yeah, no brakes at all on that one.
Oh, man. How does it handle locomotion? Is it, like, teleportation movement, or is it free movement?
Free movement. So, and you're not using the PS Move controllers. You're using the regular six-axis controller.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, the DualShock 4. So you're using the DualShock 4 in conjunction with the headset. So you can play, and they're it's the same game. So you can play it in VR, you can play it without VR.
Oh, man, I'll have to get ready for the Fear P.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on, the next game to talk about... Oh, my God, it's like I'm doing reviews. The next game that you're here to talk about, Heavy Fire Red Shadow, elevator pitch, what is it?
It is the latest or the next installment in the Heavy Fire series of games. I think this is the fifth or sixth Heavy Fire game. Yeah, there's been quite a few of them. Two of the most prominent ones being Heavy Fire Afghanistan and Heavy Fire Shattered Sphere. Both available on PSN as well as Steam. There was even one on DS, I believe. That was a while back, though. So it is a fixed position 360-degree turret shooter. So if you've ever played or ever heard of a game called Beachhead 2000, it used to be in arcades. It had like the yellow dome-looking thing you pulled over your head and you kind of rotated around.
Mm.
It's similar to that. So you're a fixed position turret. Kind of holding a kind of like a strong, not a stronghold, but what's the word I'm looking for? Basically, you're holding a line, and there's waves of enemies that just come rushing at you. It's really, really adrenaline fueled, really relentless. So you have power. You can power up your player, level up your player through skill points or skill promotion points, and then so you essentially have your turret, which is your main weapon. Then you have a rocket launcher as well. And you can call in supply drops, you can call in ground troops to help you out, you can call in supply drops via, you know, additional health or rockets or ammunition. You can call in infantry, you can call in airstrikes, you can call in attack helicopters, all sorts of things. So that'll be coming in October. There's, 8 levels? So it does have a campaign, and then after you beat campaign, then the endless mode is unlocked, and that is just pure chaos and hell. I mean, it is just unrelenting. Enemies swarming you. There's, beach landings with boats you have to worry about, and all sorts of vehicles. It's just nuts. So it's something that you're playing, and the entire world around you kind of just drops out because you're so tunnel-focused on just decimating everything on the screen.
Sounds intense.
Also in VR as well.
Oh, God, another VR game.
Yeah. You say that like it's a bad thing.
I just know that when we get VR stuff for review, I usually stream it, and I'm worried about Fear P with Home Sweet Home. And so I wonder if any of that would carry over to Heavy Fire, where I'm just ambushed by enemies.
Yeah, with a static position, you know, it controls really, really well. I mean, I think we've gone over just about everything we possibly can with a fine tooth comb to ensure that the VR experience is as good as it possibly can be. And there's no lateral movement in this one also, which makes it a bit easier. So you're just kind of like aiming, looking up and down, left and right around your environment, and still controlling the turret, the gun with the controller. You're able to play it, you know, by itself with the controller, or, you know, by itself with the VR headset and controller. So it's the same game with or without VR.
Does it work with the Move controllers?
No, just the DualShock 4.
All right. This is the series' first game on Xbox as well, isn't it?
It might be. You might be right there. But, I mean, it's actually been a while since we've actually even... I mean, Arcade Island's been a while since we put anything out on Xbox, sadly. I think the last title might have been... Was it Banfuse? Does that sound right?
Oh, man. I totally forgot about Banfuse.
I think it was Banfuse. But, yeah, it's been a while since we put anything on Xbox, so it's nice to return to the platform. I mean, they've been nothing but helpful and amazing.
Well, it's good to see Mastiff putting games back on Xbox. Now, I just have to hope for Gurumin 3D to show up on Xbox.
Well, yeah, if Microsoft decides to make a VR implementation.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go on.
I was going to ask, I know the Heavy Fire series has kind of had a mixed reception. What are you guys doing to make sure that this game lives up to... the higher standards that you guys are aiming for nowadays?
Well, I mean, it's always been, Heavy Fire has always been about low barrier to entry, pick up and play. I mean, it's not about, you know, fighting the interface, learning the maps. It's never, Heavy Fire's never been about that. So if people have gone in, maybe that's our, you know, that's our mistake in messaging, but it's never been about, you know, a serious action shooter with, you know, esports tendencies and multiplayer, you know, online matchmaking. It's always been about a very low barrier to entry, pick up and play, enjoying kind of, you know, blast everything inside action game. The previous entries to the series were on-rail shooters. So if you're not familiar with that term, you know, it's basically like you're on a roller coaster. So you're on a set path and you kind of have free range or liberty to look around and aim and shoot. So similar to a game like Time Crisis or something. So this one, what separates it from those, is that static fixed first-person view. There's no lateral, forward, backward, left, right movement. You just have to worry about everything coming from you in 360 degrees.
Just a stationary wave shooter.
Yeah, stationary wave shooter. Do you want to boil it down to that? Yeah, stationary wave shooter.
Hey, that works for me. I love wave shooters.
Does that increase or decrease the potential for motion sickness?
I think it decreases it, really.
Damn. Joe tends to get motion sick. Sorry. That's why I ask.
Oh, he's evil.
She just wants to watch me suffer.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
She's evil.
That's how you know I'm your friend.
Go to hell.
But we've play tested it internally and externally, and it's definitely something that's, you know, it's a lot of action in a place where, or an environment where you don't have to worry about, you know, carrying your teammates or kill to death ratios and all the tedium of other, you know, more core military style shooters.
Nice. So what made you guys make the change from an on rail shooter to a stationary shooter?
It was never intended. I don't think it was ever intended for us to make Heavy Fire Red Shadow as an on rail shooter. It never, that was never in the deck for us. It was always a fixed position 360 degree shooter. I don't think it was but we never really optioned it as an on-rail shooter, just to keep everything pretty straightforward, simple, and keep the action intact. So you don't have to, you know, you're not worried about another on-rail style shooter. It fit the design better, I think, is the best way I could say it.
Gotcha. I appreciate that you guys are aiming for more approachable pick up and play games than complex, complicated stuff.
Well, that and, you know, truth be told, they're not games that are going to break your wallet or break your budget. You know, they're all mid range kind of priced games. I'm not going to, certainly don't want to discredit them, They're a great value for the price, I think.
Which is good.
I would hope so.
I think you accidentally slipped and mentioned there might be a physical version of this one earlier. Is that something that you're waiting to confirm?
Of which one?
For Heavy Fire.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Nothing.
I have no recollection of this.
That's the uncomfortable button you hear being pressed, Joe.
Hypothetically, if there were one to exist, would that be a PlayStation only thing as well?
I have no idea.
I'm trying. You can't fault me for trying.
It's okay. You got my palm sweating. Like, oh shit.
It's okay. No one listens to the show, so your secret's safe.
Oh, I'll give yourself some credit. People do.
Last game that you mentioned
I'll say we are planning on something physical for Heavy Fire Red Shadow. Yes, I'll leave it at that though. Platform, okay. Everything else, I'm gonna keep quiet. You'll find out soon.
So there's plans, nothing confirmed.
Bingo.
There you go. Anyway, the last game that you're here to talk about is called Pool Elite. Tell us about this one.
Oh man. So I kind of glossed over. We're probably going to look to release this in Q1, Q2 next year. It is the most comprehensive billiards and pool game to date, I think. A lot of other titles, you know, it's just you have your core, what, 8-ball, 9-ball, and then there's, you know, your DLC packs for Carome, Snooker, 3-Cushion, yada, yada. This one has everything included from the get-go. It's very focused on tournament-style play and online matchmaking, so player-versus-player play. Ranked matchmaking. It has an ELO-based rating system. So if you're not familiar with ELO ratings, it will match you based on your skill level almost to the T. So if you're, you know, performing at a higher level, it'll match you with a higher level player that meets your skill level exactly. You know, if you slip a bit, it'll drop you down to where you need to be. But it is a multiplayer online pool and billiards experience. I mean, there's everything. This game has everything in the kitchen sink. So there's 3-Cushion, Carome, Snooker, 8-Ball, 9-Ball. Not to mention there are also equipment elements too. So if you're playing against a computer bot, we've eliminated these from PvP or ranked matches because we don't want anybody to have an advantage or an edge by using equipment or paying, you know, basically a pay-to-play style system. So we're being very cautious of this. But you will have items that you can purchase as you upgrade and level up your player profile, such as like chalk, cue sticks, glasses, watches. These all help you in the game. So it'll extend like your aiming or your sight. It'll extend your sight so you can make better, more accurate shots. It'll give you more time on your timer before it's the other player's turn. There's trick shots, mini games, everything. I mean, it's the most robust pool and billiards game to date.
Damn, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty interested in this.
I think the coolest point and their coolest aspect to me is it's developed by Elite Game Studios in Turkey. And these guys are really, really, really big pool and billiards fans. One of the guys is actually a former champion, regional champion, and they've worked with two world professional pool players. And so, you know, a lot of games have tout that they have, like, you know, our physics are, you know, spot on, blah, blah, blah. So not only are the physics in Pool Elite, like, spot on, and we're using physics, NVIDIA physics, but we've also tuned the game using two world-class champions. You know, so they've spent countless hours with this game to make sure that everything feels right. So if something doesn't roll right, if something, you know, isn't bouncing right or hitting right, then they're there to correct it. So they've dumped countless hours into this game to make sure that it feels and plays like pool and billiards should be.
So can you say that they're going balls out with the game?
They are going balls to the wall.
Fuck off, Joe.
I deserve that, and I accept it.
And, you know, it's also new territory for us too, because the style of gameplay, just focusing with online kind of a gameplay elements, it's something that's really new to Mastiff. So we want to make sure, and we had it tentatively set for release, you know, in fall. Earlier this year, we had released a teaser for, you know, our fall, summer fall lineup. And Pool Elite was in those titles, but, you know, we want to make sure that we're getting this right. We want to make sure that the game plays and feels and like it should. And not only that, but that it's a rewarding experience for the player, too. So we postponed that, and that pushed us out to early Q1, Q2 next year. So we think it'll be a solid experience by that time.
Hey, it's better to have a good game at launch than try to patch it and fix mistakes.
Yeah, because then you completely miss your audience, and by that time it's just a stick in the mud.
Yeah.
Will there be, since there's a multiplayer aspect, will there be like character models?
Yeah, that's one thing we talked about, and we don't really have anything set in stone just yet for that. Okay. But it would be nice, and I agree with you, it would be awesome if we could get some sort of like an avatar system. Right now, there isn't. So you don't have like your own room, whatever, or your customizable avatar, blah, blah, blah. Even though you can purchase equipment for your player, you don't have a physical representation of a player character in the game.
Okay. I just want to be able to play as a chick. and that's a funny thing, but in pool games, very often there are not female character models, if there's a character model at all. So I just wanted to like push that in there, like, hi.
Interesting, because I'll say one of the most prominent pool players is Black Widow.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a kick-ass pool player.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that, I don't know if maybe it's the same argument that Battlefield used to give, that it was just too hard to make an extra character model have boobs. Oh, but it's something that I've noticed. My husband loves pool games, and I've played them quite a few times, but they're not my favorite, and it's usually because of that lack of customization option that I'm just like, eh.
Well, we know, I mean, think pool and billiards. I mean, everybody immediately thinks, the main two kind of games is just traditional 8-ball pool and 9-ball.
Yeah.
And then, if you jump across the pond, snooker is the most prominent and popular. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens when we release that game. I think there is a big pool audience and billiards audience here. It's just getting it right. I mean, I played quite a bit of Hustle Kings on PlayStation, and it's a solid game. And I'm really hoping that we're able to perform at or above that level.
So if it's going to be online, you did say it's going to be on all the platforms, Switch and PlayStation and Xbox, right?
Yes, correct.
Will it have cross-platform play?
That is a very good question, and I am delighted to say that yes, we will have cross-platform online play.
Awesome.
Wow.
A lot of people think that's impossible, but, it's not. It's not.
Is it going to be...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, is it going to be limited to Switch and Xbox only? Because I know Sony's been pretty, dickish about cross-platform play.
I didn't say that.
No, I did. I say it quite a bit.
We haven't announced all the details regarding cross-platform online play just yet, but we're trying to make it, open to all.
That'd be
really cool.
Good luck with that.
We'll do our best.
You're going to need that luck, but good luck.
Well, and especially when you release a game, and it's a niche, not pulling any punches, and when you release a niche sports game, especially, what you don't want is to open up the game to online play and then have the lobbies be a ghost town.
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, it was in our best interest to look into cross-platform online play and see if that's something that we're able to do, and happy to report that, yeah, it is.
Well, that's fantastic. I did not expect, I'm not going to lie, I asked the question, but I wasn't expecting yes to be the answer. Because you just kind of don't like it. At this point, I don't even expect yes to be the answer to when I say, hey, is there online? So online and cross-platform is no small feat.
No.
Well, definitely good luck on making that work. I would love to see cross-platform between everyone, but...
You're going to get him in trouble, Joe.
Hey, I'm trying to not call Sony a dick anymore, so...
Too late.
I said I'm trying.
Speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks. Oh, man, I know we've been chatting for a good while now. Is there anything that you wanted to bring up and discuss that we didn't ask?
I think we touched base on just about everything, really. I mean, we also have another game that we have not announced yet. We'll try to announce fairly soon. I don't want to say anything yet. But we do have another title planned for probably summer, I'll say. Summer next year. I think a lot of people are really going to dig it. I'm super excited for it. I think it adds more diversity to our slate.
How did you get that many masochists in one place at one time to release games so rapid fire?
Oh my gosh, you have no idea. I haven't gone to bed on time in the last 2 weeks, and that's not to say that we're, you know, slave driving company. Totally not. We're a really small publisher for being around for 16 years. I mean, people. I don't know if we give off a bigger presence, but I mean, we're a really small publisher in terms of employee size. But we do, you know, we work really hard. We're all in communication. A lot of us work remotely, and we make it happen. I mean, it's a very, very busy time of year for sure. But I think what we've got going for us right now is working well, and I'm excited to see these games come out and release, and hopefully we'll see a little success out of them and people enjoy them. I mean, that's the main thing I really want is people to say like, oh, okay, this is from Massive Games. It's fun. It's, you know, it's not a, it didn't cost me $70 for a limited edition for stuff I'm not going to use and all that. And it's, you know, it's easy to pick up and play. I'm not fighting against the interface within the first 10 minutes. You know, I know what's going on. I'm able to play it to its fullest potential. So I think we're striving for something good here.
And in the case of Home Sweet Home, hey, I shit myself in fear. Yay.
Yeah, a little fear pee.
We're going to have to upgrade from fear pee to fear poo.
Just clench the entire time you're playing.
Just clench, yes.
That's a bigger problem for Joe than for me, is all I'm going to say.
Maybe we'll change that to our tagline for the game, just clench.
Mastiff Games, just clench.
Yeah.
You're welcome, and we're sorry.
It's like EA Sports. It's in the game. Mastiff Games, just clench.
Clench.
You can use that if you want.
I just added a Home Sweet Home header to our Twitter social on Mastiff Games, and I'll make sure to add that. I'll be like, just clench.
The funny part is there's going to be people looking for you guys because of Arcade Islands, and they're going to be expecting to see all kinds of cutesy stuff, and then they're going to click on your Twitter, and it's just going to be Home Sweet Home banner.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Hashtag family friendly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, sorry about that confusion.
My friend asked me when he saw you guys reply with the family friendly hashtag. He's like, should you say something? I'm like, they know what the show is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was me. I was referring to the game. Then I thought about what you said. I was like, oh, shoot. He needs the pot. Yeah, certainly not.
There is absolutely nothing family friendly about a review done by me. Ever.
One of these days, we'll go for a G-rated episode.
Good luck. I would bite my tongue off before we got through the intro.
Sounds like good listening material to me.
Yeah. Then you can try and say fire truck like that.
Fire truck.
Fire truck.
No. The favorite one that we didn't even bring up is one Joe gives me the most grief for. Are you ready? Oh.
What? Oil?
Oh. Oil.
Oh, oil.
It's oil. That's Joe's favorite, and I can't believe he went the whole show without bringing it up.
I try to just let you go at your own pace anymore.
You know the terrible thing is that I've been married to D for 17 years. God, I just aged myself. But the terrible thing is that his mother still laughs anytime I say something funny. And I just look at her, I'm like, it's been 17 fucking years. Why is that still funny to you? Her favorite is 5. Uh-huh. That's like the one she'll be like, what time do I gotta go get the girls? 5. Uh-huh. Also, fuck you, but I can't say that to you.
Well, it's out there now.
Yeah. She doesn't listen to the show, thank God.
No one does.
But I have a question for you guys. If you could, totally hypothetical, if you could make one cool tchotchke or promotional item for Home Sweet Home, what would it be?
Ooh.
Or for the audience. Man.
Just any kind of in a collector edition type of scenario?
I mean, like something to give out on social, something collector's edition, not that there is one, but yeah, just if you were able to make one promotional item or tchotchke, kind of like piece of swag, whatever, what would it be?
Okay, mine's going to be a little elaborate. Bear with me. Have you ever seen what's called an Amigurumi doll?
And a what?
An yeah. An Amigurumi. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I'm probably rednecking it. But basically, it's a really tight, tiny crochet knit. And I have a friend who makes dolls using this knit. And she just makes these incredibly insane, you know, detailed dolls. Like, number three, all of her stuff is Alice in Wonderland themed. And for a reason that nobody on the show gets, because I call her number three on the show. But when she was born, my friend made her these really fantastic Amigurumi dolls that were Alice in Wonderland themed. I love Amigurumi dolls. So, like, a
really they would be pretty cryptic. Yeah, I'm looking at images of them now. Like a happy cactus, a little teddy bear dog.
Yeah, but like I've seen a couple creepy ones, and if you can do it, oh, they look so cool. Like, I had another friend make one that looked like a Chucky doll.
Oh my god.
So, yeah,
the game does have an aspect of voodoo in there. So one of the characters in the game in Home Sweet Home, she exercises a voodoo spell. It backfires on her. Okay, I'm giving away too much of the story. But there's one of the items you find and pick up in the game is they're two figures holding each other together. It's bound by string. That would be really cool to see a Amigurumi doll like that.
I was going in a different route. One of the screenshots shows a doll filled with nails, and just do a plushie of that.
I'd say that's another something you'll find, yeah.
Just a plushie with, like, plush nails that are nice and soft and friendly for all ages. But a plushie of that, I think, would be fun. Or if you're looking for something smaller, do you remember those pens that if you hold them one way, it has liquid in them, and if you flip them the other way, all the liquid is gone?
Oh, yeah, are you talking about the ones that had, like, a little plastic slide in them?
Yeah, just one of those filled with blood.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. You know, back in the day, I bought, like, a copy of Saw, like, the first movie Saw on DVD, and it had, like, a little liquid-filled insert on the inside of the DVD case. So it was, like, a clear DVD case. And it had like a little saw blade in there, and it was filled with red oil. It was filled with it's filled with red oil, and so it looked like the saw blade was floating around in blood. It's pretty cool, but yeah, that would be interesting.
The blood is fun.
Yeah, my whole thing, and I'm not sure I'm actually gonna get a chance to do this. Is the main like the female evil spirit that you see in the game? She's pretty prominent. You've probably seen a picture of her. She carries around a box cutter. So you can hear her, like, when she's walking around, it's like an audio cue, you know, when she's nearby you, because you'll hear a clicking, like, of the box cutter sliding out. So you'll hear, and that's the blade sliding, like, extracting and retracting.
Nice.
But I really wanted to make, like, a box cutter with a USB stick kind of inserted into it, so you could stick it out, and, like, with assets on it and such.
Oh, that'd be cool as hell. Like, put a soundtrack on there, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bigger undertaking than I thought.
And then we could all be sad that we would get it on Xbox.
You gotta find a way to, you know, make a mold, fit the USB stick in there, and it's just... Yeah. But if I could find a way to do it, I will. Trust me, I will. If you know me by now, I love doing thematic-style stuff with press copies.
Yes. I had the glitter at the old place to remind me of that.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I tried not to glitter bomb people too hard.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
I want to be glitter bombed. Oh, how come Joe gets all of the cool stuff for the show, and I never
I'll send you a copy of Party Planet on Xbox One with in a glitter bomb. But you're just gonna get a glitter bomb because there's no copy on Xbox One.
Good enough.
Good enough. Just a glitter bomb.
I'll give you some shades, some Stunna shades too.
Yay! Yes. Gotta wear the shades.
Yeah. Well, I hope that was informative. I didn't stumble over myself too much. An exciting time. Lots of stuff to do.
Hell of a lineup.
Uncomfortable.
tons of stuff to do still. Hopefully I'll get to bed at a reasonable hour tonight. I've been up late, really late, like the last 2 weeks, just making sure everything's getting out there. Everything's going well. We have all the right assets we need, all the right information. And we're working on, I think I might have mentioned it on Twitter earlier, we are working on a new trailer for Home Sweet Home 2. Not Home Sweet Home 2, but Home Sweet Home will have
a new
trailer. So we'll hopefully have something out. hopefully by next week. I know it's pretty busy with TGS and everything, but we'll have a pretty cool trailer coming out next week.
Well, we are looking forward to that. We are looking forward to the games. And David, it is always a pleasure having you on here chatting.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Where can people keep up to date with you and everything that Mastiff is doing?
Mastiff, even though we are just Mastiff, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Mastiff Games. So / Mastiff Games, Facebook / Mastiff Games on Twitter. And Instagram, though I haven't had a chance to do much with the Instagram account lately, I think it's Mastiff_Games. Or just go to our fresh, newly designed, redesigned website at mastiff-games.com.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And what about you personally? Where can people keep up to date with you?
First name, last name on the Twitters, David Bruno.
Easy enough.
Yeah, like Bruno Mars, but he beat me to the cool punch. That bastard.
Fuck him.
Yeah, but if anybody ever wants to shoot the breeze about horror movies, cars, games, I always love to talk. So, depending I have time, but I'll always make time for anybody who wants to chat. So, I mean, even if they want to email me, I mean, if you want to email awareness@mastiff-games.com, you know, I'm always happy to answer people.
Just email and talk about horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm totally okay with that. Which, just watched the new Predator, by the way. It was terrible.
I have not seen it, no.
Don't. Just save yourself. If you want to go watch a comedy, go watch Predator, but it was so bad.
I was supposed to go see the new Mission Impossible last night, and that didn't happen because I was too busy helping my mom move.
I'm sorry.
I'm still, fingers crossed, next week our local theater's going to have the Meg. I still want to see that, too.
Oh, dear God, I want to go see that. Because, see, that knows what it is. It
looks awful, and I can't wait.
It looks like a cheesy Jason Statham movie with a giant-ass shark. I mean, that's a popcorn flick for sure. Yeah. I just did not go into Predator knowing it was going to be super humorous and a lot of, I don't know, it just felt like a lot of dick and fart jokes, you know? Just like immature jokes. I'm just like, wow, they went there with that? They
changed the Predator lore movie?
Yeah. If you go see it, you'll know immediately the line. They hung on this line for like way too long, and I'm like, I was just like looking at my girlfriend in the seat, and I was just like, this is really awkward. And there's a couple of times where I literally almost got up and just like walked out. I was like, shit, would I rather be at home working? Hand to God, I actually thought, I was like, dude, I would rather be working right now and sending out like Arcade Island keys than watching The Predator. But hey, at least I got my 20% off concessions with my movie pass.
Hey, that works.
That's a perk. Anyhow, I won't hold you guys up any longer.
On that note, David, it has been fantastic having you on the show. Come back sometime soon.
Oh, I'd love to. I mean, we can. In the meantime, I'll think of words that contain a large amount of eyes.
Sounds good.
He's just gonna like have a post-it note on his desk, and every time he thinks of a word with an eye. He's just going to write it down real quick and be like, I'm going to go back on that podcast eventually.
It's going to be on my whiteboard's list of I words.
You'll come awesome. On. You okay, won't have a game to talk about. It'll just be I words.
I'm okay with that.
David, have a wonderful night.
All right, you guys too. Thanks so much.
Thanks for chatting with us.
Bye-bye.
Oh, man, that was fantastic.
No, I'm trying to think of I words, but I don't have any.
You don't need to think of I words.
They're better when they just kind of randomly fall out of my face.
Yeah, it's good when it just happens. But, man, we have a lot of news to still take care of. We have reviews to take care of. We have a lot of shows still. We should probably just dive right into this, shall we?
Let me get my notebook here. Let me see.
Well, we got news first.
I made notes on news. I assume you've already, like, seen everything that I saw, but just in case. I made notes.
Well, just in case you missed or you got something I missed, we'll have you on standby.
Okay.
Okay. I think the big news of the week is Sony has announced the PlayStation Classic. Have you heard about this one?
Yeah.
So, taking a page from Nintendo with the NES and SNES Classic, Sony's going to release a mini version of the PS1 with 20 games pre-installed on it. It's coming out December 3rd for $99.99. It will not include an AC adapter, but it will come with the USB cable for it, so you just got to make sure you have a USB adapter to plug into the wall. Also comes with two controllers. A full list of games has not been announced yet. But yeah. Five games have been announced, with Jumping Flash, Ridge Racer Type 4, Tekken 3, and then two that I'm excited about, Wild Arms and Final Fantasy VII.
Right.
So it makes you wonder what the other 15 games are going to be.
It's a good question. I'm not surprised at Final Fantasy VII, though, because isn't there like a Final Fantasy VII remake coming for PlayStation 4 and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of a given that it would be on there. I do want to mention, though, wasn't there one point where a CEO or one of the higher-ups at Sony was like, nobody wants to play these old games, they look awful?
Yeah, so instead they're releasing these old games, and in the case of something like Jumping Flash, oh my god, that game looks fucking awful these days.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be on there.
That come back to bite them in the ass.
People don't want to play old games, so here's a $100 system with old games. I'm excited for it. I loved the PlayStation 1. I thought it was an amazing system. It has one of the greatest RPG lineups imaginable. I'm excited for this thing, and I'm excited to see what other games are going to be on it. I'm sold on Final Fantasy and Wild Arms alone, honestly.
I'm Googling something real quick before I make the next statement that I want to make.
I'll wait.
Now you're going to make me nervous, though, playing.
Are you still looking?
Was Parasite Eve on the PlayStation 1 or was it 2?
Yes. Both of them are on PlayStation 1. You could have just fucking asked me instead of Googling.
That's why I gave up. I did try to Google it and I couldn't find it. So here's the thing that I was going to say. I only give a fuck whatsoever if Parasite Eve is on it.
That one might be a bit too niche.
I know, but I would pay $100 if it had Parasite Eve. Because I've been on a kick lately. I know I've said it in the past few shows where, like, if there was a remaster of that game, if there was a remake, if they just brought that motherfucker back and put it on an Xbox, will never happen, I'm sure. But if they did, they could charge whatever they fucking wanted, and I'd sell my husband on the black market to get it.
Nice.
Because I have an attachment to that game that I can't justify.
See, we're at the point that I think Square Enix could release their own PlayStation Classic of just PS1 games, and they would fill it with 20 classics.
Yeah, and they'd easily. Probably be pretty good ones. I mean, as much as I have bitched about Square Enix recently and their whole bringing games remasters and stuff to PlayStation and not Xbox, they had a pretty solid lineup back in the day. Yeah. And I'd pay a hefty price for quite a few of them. I mean, I'm pissed at them, but I'm still going to buy Devil May Cry 5. I'll still break my neck for it. So
that doesn't have anything to do with Square Enix.
It's Capcom, isn't it?
Yeah.
See? I'm getting all mixed up. So then I don't even have to feel guilty and hypocritical. Because fuck Square Enix then.
Well, we'll be talking about Capcom in a minute, but in other Sony news, it's been confirmed that Sony is ending PlayStation Vita production in 2019. So it looks like this is the final nail in the coffin for the Vita.
For some reason, I thought that had already happened.
In America, they ended it. This is in Japan. Okay. Like, so they are completely finished next year, which is a shame.
When you said it, I was like, but that happened. So that actually missed
I should have clarified in Japan then.
It was a thing. But yeah, that's pretty much it's uber dead then.
Yeah.
When they stop selling shit in Japan, that's when it's fucked.
Yeah, which it's a shame. As much as I harp on Sony and I have my issues with the PS4 and I think the PS3 was garbage as well, the Vita is an amazing handheld and it has been ignored by Sony for far too long, and now it's just being unceremoniously dumped for good, which is a shame.
Yeah. It's a little weird how everybody kind of attached to the Switch because of the handheld aspect and like lost their shit over it and how wonderful it was that it could be a regular console or a handheld. And yet it seems like Sony and Microsoft are both just like, what's a handheld?
Yeah.
And it's like, but everybody has handhelds in their pockets as their phones and tablets and the Switch. And that's clearly a market that is feasible. Yeah. So why does it not get any love from the major two console?
Because Nintendo's got that shit on lock.
I wonder, though, if it's, I mean, the lack of options has to have some kind of effect on that, though, right?
I don't know. The lack of options was supposed to be filled with the PSP and the Vita, and both of those were shelved.
Wasn't the PSP awful, though?
It had ups and it was an amazing RPG machine.
Okay. But again, that's realistically in the US, that's a little more niche. Like for all everybody hollers, I want more RPGs. It's still not the bulk of the market.
Yeah.
Not to say they're not successful and that there shouldn't be more of them, because there totally should be, but it's not a large enough share of the market to justify having a machine that's really good at RPGs and not much else. But I don't know. I just feel like there just needs to be a little something more to push. The market needs a little innovation as far as handhelds go. Yeah. Look how much everybody lost their shit when there were rumors of that Xbox handheld.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see some kind of portable Xbox, but I don't think it'll ever happen. I think if anything, we might see some Microsoft properties show up on like the 3DS, or if Nintendo puts out a new dedicated portable. I don't see anything showing up on the Switch, as cool as it would be, but I don't know. I don't see Microsoft trying to compete with Nintendo on handhelds.
GamerScore whores need to make a bigger ruckus about GamerScore on the go.
Hey, they tried with Windows Phone and no one gave a shit.
They did, but I keep saying I feel like, but it really just seems to me like the GamerScore community is not large enough to make a ruckus like that on their own and get away with it.
No. I don't know. Other news, you mentioned Capcom before. Capcom Vancouver, the development studio behind the recent Dead Rising games, has been shut down, with all future projects, including a presumed Dead Rising 5, canceled. No word on what this means for the franchise, but it's always a bummer to see studios get shut down.
It is, and it seems like it was kind of just out of nowhere. I remember seeing a tweet like, oh, hi, I was part of Capcom Vancouver and I need a job now.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? But yeah, I imagine Dead Rising is... I don't think Dead Rising 4 did very well, did it?
I guess not.
So, that's...
Some people were pissed about the changes that they made. I enjoyed what I played of it. I didn't get to play as much as I would have liked because, you know, I don't get to play games for enjoyment anymore these days.
What is playing games for fun? I never played Dead Rising. I've not played any of them.
You should.
I know. I like zombie games. I don't know what it is.
What the fuck are you waiting for?
I don't know. Like, I see it and I go, oh, that's a thing I should play. And then I keep scrolling.
Oh, man. Let's see. What other news? THQ Nordic is continuing its purchasing spree as it picked up the rights to real-time strategy game Act of War and horror series Alone in the Dark from Atari.
I'm pretty excited about Alone in the Dark. Horror, imagine that. Who would think that I would be excited about a horror game?
Dark Mika trying to bring up the whole Kingdoms of Amalur purchase that we talked about last week as well. But THQ Nordic is on fire with buying shit.
They really, it's like every week we have to announce what THQ Nordic bought.
I'm not mad at it.
Right. We need a little theme song and everything. What did THQ buy?
I wonder if Grant would do something.
That's going to be amazing. Speaking of dicks.
Two games were added to the backward compatible lineup this week, with Greg Hastings Paintball 2, of all fucking games, and Brutal Legend.
Okay.
I was excited about Brutal Legend, but Greg Hastings Paintball 2.
There was a Paintball 1?
Yeah, on the original Xbox.
Oh, so then it's still a potential for backward compatibility.
The games that they were going to announce for backward compatibility, Greg Hastings Paintball 2 was pretty low on the list for me.
Did you have it?
No, but I ordered it.
Do you actually have every backward compatible game at this point?
No, I'm missing a chunk.
There was still a few you were shy of, right?
Yeah, there's a handful of missing. Most of them are like Cabela games.
Oh, you know, the crazy thing is that I have a lot of Cabela games. I don't know of that that's as crazy as it sounds like.
Of course
After
you
I
would.
After I said it, I was like, yeah, that's not so weird. Everybody would expect my redneck ass to have the Cabela games.
Shocking. Shocking revelation.
It's a thing.
Oh, Lord. Last bit of news I have is it was announced four games are going to be leaving Game Pass at the end of September, with Maldita Castilla EX, Curse Castle, Saints Row, Get Out of Hell, The Bug Butcher, and Tower of Guns all leaving Game Pass.
Tower of Guns is a relatively easy completion, is it not?
I don't know.
I feel like I that's like the eighth time I've said I feel like, but I'm pretty certain that Shiz and them have said that that's an easy completion. So you probably want to hit that if you haven't. I need to remember to hit that, but what is it to play games on that you chose again?
With what?
Like when you, what's it called when you get to choose a game to play instead of being told?
I don't know.
I don't either. That's the point.
There was this thing, I don't know, once upon a dream. I think it was playing games for enjoyment.
Ugh. That sounds awful. There was a game last month I wanted to play before it the bridge, and I didn't because I just ran out of time. And the terrible part is, like, we announce when a game is going to be leaving Game Pass. We usually know about a week and a half, 2 weeks in advance, and I still run out of fucking time and don't get to play a 3 or 4 hour long game.
That'll teach you.
I actually have two news things that you didn't have.
Let's hear them. What do you
And got? I can't believe you've missed this one, Joe, because this is fantastic. I guess it's a newspaper article. A report in the UK is blaming 5% of divorces on Fortnite.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. That's fucking weird. I think Seth Meyers made a joke about that, and he said the other 95% get divorced due to another video game called Tinder.
Yeah. Fortnite or addiction to games. It wasn't always specifically Fortnite, although Fortnite was listed in some of them by name. But addiction to games was listed as the cause for 5%. Yeah, 5% out of 4,665 divorces. So roughly around 200. The interesting thing that was mentioned, though, that kind of caught my eye was that there was an uptick in divorces being blamed on games and Fortnite that was timed alongside of major patches.
Oh, God.
So, so you were more likely, which is funny because if you've ever had Fortnite installed, that motherfucker updates like every 3 days.
It does. I always see that in my recently updated list.
I haven't played it in, like, I don't know. How long has it even been a thing? It's been a good eight or nine months.
I haven't played it since, like, a few weeks after we covered it on the show. And that's because, for some reason, the review code that I had didn't work right. And it was telling me I didn't own the game. Apparently, a lot of people ran into the same issue, but I just never gave a shit afterwards.
I don't know. I never played the Save the World because I watched people stream it, and there was so goddamn much reading. Like, the whole screen was just filled with constant tutorial after tutorial. I was like, this is, the learning curve is too damn steep, and I'm too damn old. And so I didn't get into Save the World, but I got harassed enough when Battle Royale came out for it. Everybody's like, oh my God, you gotta try it. And then I thought, I'm gonna install it and I'm gonna play it. And the only reason I'm gonna install it and play it is to make Studa install it and play it so that I can convince him to get PUBG.
Oh God.
And it worked. And anyway, I haven't played it since. The other piece of news I have, nobody is surprised that my pieces of news were Fortnite and Call of Duty.
Shocker.
But, The other one was that, first, it's no news that PS4 has exclusive rights to the DLC for Call of Duty. That's been the case for a few years now. But there's a change this year. And that is that they are also going to have timed exclusive rights to events and free content.
Fuck Activision and fuck Sony.
That's absolutely horrible. Now, for events, it's 7 days. I don't know if it's specific, if it changes for the free content or not, but it is absolutely horrible to put free content on a timed exclusive like that. And one of the things, like, I see a lot of people just going, oh, it's just horrible because they get more time with it. And that's true, especially in the case of the timed events. But one thing that actually kind of caught me that I didn't see anybody talking about was how this affects content creators and streamers and guide makers who don't get that if they're on Xbox or PC. They don't have access to that content. By the time that their content is released for it, PlayStation content creators have already had it for a week and have already saturated the market.
Yeah, it's some bullshit. But so nothing shocks me with Activision anymore. It really doesn't. Everyone says EA is the worst company in the world. I still think Activision definitely is so much worse.
EA fucks up from time to time, but at least when they get their ass kicked for fucking up, they turn around and try to make it right for a year or two before they fuck up again. Activision's just like, whatever, bitches, give us your money.
Yeah.
And they do not care.
At all.
But I thought that was kind of a big deal to say, oh, even the free content and the events are the bigger thing because those are timed. If they're anything like the events were in World War II, you know, there's a limited amount of time that you can do a limited number of quests and objectives and try to unlock limited edition gear. It's pretty shitty to go, oh, well, Xbox and PC, good luck getting that shit that we put in the game.
No.
You're SOL. You know, we hope you like one gun and not two because you don't have enough time to unlock two.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Anyway, that's it. I'm done.
Anyway, reviews. We should probably get to those, huh?
Speaking of dicks.
First game to talk about tonight is called My Brother Rabbit, developed and published by Artifex Monday. It released September 21st on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $14.99. So this one's new for everybody. In this magnificent land of make-believe, a cute little rabbit wants to nurse his ill friend, the flower, back to health in any way he can. He must use his wits to decipher puzzles inspired by classic point-and-clicks, uncover hidden objects, and play mini-games to continue his adventure. Is it just child's play, or does it all have a deeper meaning that reflects reality? Ooh, Cole, tell us about this one.
Well, shit, now I gotta be careful not to give away a spoiler. I love Artifex Monday games, and I'm so glad to see that they have broke out of their mold for My Brother Rabbit. When you've played an Artifex Monday game, you know what you're going to get. You know, you're getting a hidden object puzzle. You know that there's going to be, you know, the puzzles and the mini games, and you're going to have a female protagonist. It's all going to be voice acted, and the animation's going to be a little wonky. You know what you're getting when you buy it. My Brother Rabbit makes a conscious effort to break that mold. It doesn't quite shake up the genre entirely. There's a few things that you're going to recognize in it, and then you go, oh yeah, this is an Artifex Monday game. But for the most part, it does really try to take that formula and shed it off and get the bulk off. So you have a story that, first of all, is just absolutely beautifully illustrated. I just adored the artwork in this game. It is so obscenely surreal. It's so creative. Every scene is just filled with so much unique detail that you don't mind just sitting there staring for the items that you're looking for the hidden object part, because you're lost in the details, from trees that have test tubes on them instead of leaves to just giant melted clocks leaking down walls. It's just so much to take in.
Yeah, it is definitely the best looking Artifacts game that they've put out, easily.
The animations are smooth. Everything felt comfortable to play. It's just fantastic as far as all that goes. Like, I've said before that some of their ports, you could kind of see where the price jump had paid off a little bit. This is what that price jump paid for, and it was worth it. Absolutely. There is no voice acting in it. There's no text. There's no dialogue. It is all just, you know, plays out via the illustrations and the animations. And there's a lot left to decipher on your own. There's two stories that kind of run parallel, trying not to spoil. But you have a story of a family who, you know, there's a mother, a father, a son, and a toddler daughter. And the little girl becomes ill. Meanwhile, you have the story of a plush rabbit. And the rabbit is trying, in this parallel story, he's trying to get medical help for a little sick flower bud. And so your goal is to guide the rabbit through all these different puzzles that are blocking his way for getting help for the flower. So you're gonna have to interact with the puzzles to get a clue as to what kind of object is missing. And then you'll need to go through the various scenes and look for these objects in the world. One thing that was really creative about this, though, was that you don't just sit and stare hopelessly at a screen if you're looking for an object and go, I have no idea if it's here or not. You're not going to sit and look at one scene for an hour looking for something that might not be there, because the items that you're looking for are represented up at the top, and there are dots to let you know how many you have and how many are you still need. And if you're looking at a scene and that object that you're looking for isn't available in that scene, it's just grayed out. So you know, oh, okay, I need to back up again and look in the next page or look at the other page to see if that's where the object is, as opposed to just getting stuck looking hopelessly.
Yeah, I enjoy that the entire game is a hidden object puzzle sequence.
Yeah.
And not just dedicated in this single screen. You got to find all these items. It's just the entire world is a hidden object puzzle game.
Right. The one thing, though, that did get me is that there are a couple of puzzles that if you have ever played an Artifacts Monday game, you have undoubtedly seen before. And that's why I said there are moments where you're like, oh, yeah, this is an Artifacts game. Because you'll see these puzzles and immediately go, I know how to do this.
Yeah.
in a way, I didn't mind it. I know some people will be like, oh, look at them recycling puzzles. But I didn't really mind it because everything else had been changed enough and it shook up the formula just enough that I felt like this was more of like, rather than being a rehash, it was kind of an homage. Like, yeah, we know you like these puzzles. Come and get you some of the little spinning posts that you have to connect with yarn.
It's Artifacts Monday's greatest hits.
Yeah. I did feel like they were a little on the too easy side as far as some of those kind of puzzles go. There were others that were just genuinely left me sitting there going, I need a minute. Usually those were more of the environmental puzzles, though, as opposed to the ones where you were just actively trying to solve like a mini game in front of you. These are the ones where you had to find different items in the world and put them together and use them properly. So even still, if you got stuck on something like that, it didn't necessarily hinder your progress because you could just go and look for other hidden objects until it kind of dawned on you what the fuck you were supposed to do. So in all, it took maybe, I want to say, about four and a half hours to play through the campaign. It is a one and done kind of story, though. There's not a whole lot of reason for replay.
Achievements.
except for the achievements, which were hidden when I played, so I still don't even know what they were. I get to check that out after the show. I think I had around 750 out of 1,000 when I did the math, so I missed a couple.
Nice.
But I, you know, beyond going back and trying to get whatever couple achievements you miss, once you've done it, you've done it. That said, everybody should play it because that is one of the most touching, heartwarming little stories that we have experienced on Xbox in a long ass time. Well, and I then, just adored it.
Well, then for $15, what's your official verdict?
Buy it. Buy it quickly. And play it and enjoy it and thank me.
Will do. Next game to talk about is called Immortal Unchained, developed by Toadman Interactive, published by Toadman Interactive, and sold out sales and marketing. Released September 7th on Xbox One, PC, and PS4 for $49.99. Unleashed and unforgiving, can you rise to the challenge? Immortal Unchained is the latest addition to the genre of ultra-hardcore action RPGs. Take the role of a living weapon unleashed to stop the source of a cataclysmic event threatening to end all worlds. Cole, tell us about this one right after I thank No Time for Games for his 700 biddies. Holy hell. Thank you so much.
That is a lot of biddies, though. And it's going to refitty your shitty compitty.
It is.
Every time I say that successfully, I'm so proud of myself.
So what is Immortal Unchained?
Immortal Unchained is a third-person action shooter. It is not playing when it says that it is hardcore. This is, I don't want to be one of those people that says it's the Dark Souls, but it's very, very similar to Dark
Souls. It very much feels like a Souls game.
I've never even played Dark Souls. I've just seen like clips of it. And when I was playing this, I was like, oh, this is what Dark Souls feels like. it's just one of those, like, you can immediately recognize what it was trying to be. I will say the first thing that I was really excited about is that you can create your character. And you get some pretty hardcore customization here. You can play as a male, you can play as a female, your female can have a goddamn mustache and wear a loincloth if you want her to, and it works out just fine.
Yeah.
You can go pretty hardcore here. You can have some control over the characters. You choose classes. I think it breaks it down into race, doesn't it? Uses the term race. But there are different classes. They have different benefits. I think there were 5. But then and beyond that, you can also just customize what they look like, customize skin tone. You can customize their tattoos, their hair. I was genuinely impressed by the amount of customization. As far as actual gameplay goes, unfortunately, it's really clunky, and I feel so bad for that. when I have to be harsh on a game, it sucks. And this one, I have to be harsh with it. The gunplay is not comfortable. It's not intuitive. You press A to reload.
Yeah, some of the button choices confused me.
They're like,
why they did what they did.
It's Y to heal, A to reload. LB is supposed to swap between your weapons. There's also like a charge power-up shot for the guns. And I couldn't always get that to work at all. Like, you could sit there and hold the buttons that the instructions tell you to hold for it. Not shit happened. I could shoot an enemy and they would take zero damage from it. I was like, okay, that's, and then you die because these fuckers will kill you really quick. I think
that is my biggest gripe with this game is just how easily you can die in this game.
That health bar is deceptive.
What, 2-3 hits and you're dead?
Yeah, that health bar spans like 2/3 of the screen, but you get hit twice, you're fucked. And I don't know if you had the same problem I did, but there's some unfairness that goes on with some of the enemies. Their AI is kind of shit to start with, but on top of that, like, they teleport. Some of them do. Not the early ones, but some of the later ones can teleport. And those motherfuckers will teleport into a wall and kill you. And there isn't anything you can do about it. or they can teleport behind a wall and shoot you through that motherfucker. And you're just sitting there going, hello, I can't shoot them through the wall.
Yeah, their aim is impeccable.
Yeah, there's no cover system. You're just stuck. It's like, okay, well, if I run out of this room far enough, maybe I can hit Y. Oh, never mind. I've already hit Y on accident trying to swap my weapons, and I don't have any health anymore. It's kind of dumbfounding. It really is. On top of that, I said the controls are clunky, and that goes for the button mapping, but it also just goes for the general gunplay. The sniper rifle only has like 25 meters of damage before it falls off. It's a sniper. I should be able to hit them from across the room.
Yeah.
You're not hitting them from across the room. It's just going to fall off before. And it was incredibly infuriating. So basically your only choice was run in with, you know, whatever you've got and hope it hits them. And a lot of the times it didn't. I tried to play. I hate lock-on aim assist in shooters. One, because not to toot my own horn, but I'm fucking good at shooters. And lock-on just kind of like fucks you over because it goes for whatever's closest rather than what's actually an imminent threat. And so I don't care if there's a dude walking toward me. I'm more concerned about the dude over there that can shoot me from a distance.
Yeah.
You didn't have any say in it. Like the lock-on would just bounce around kind of erratically. But if you didn't use the lock-on, it was almost kind of like, yeah, okay, I pushed the button to aim, but it's just going to float in an arch and go wherever it wants first. And it was just really difficult to control it. Even with sensitivity settings changed around the way I like, I couldn't do it. I've never felt like putting on the aim assist was a better option. And even still, turning it on here was the better option, and it was still bad.
Yeah,
and I was sad.
That's one of the downfalls with this game is Souls games work well because it's all based on dodging and parrying. But when you're dealing with bullets, you don't really have the time to dodge or the ability to parry. So it just feels like the deck is stacked against you from the very beginning.
Yeah, there's literally nothing you can do. And then if you die, you get thrown all the way back to the last obelisk that you interacted with. And you have to, of course, all the enemies have respawned and you have to go and do this shit again. And you have to fight with the controls all over again. And, you know, hope that you had health this time around when you got to whatever fucked you over the last time. But chances are good you tried to swap guns and you don't. So it was just infuriatingly clunky to control. One of my other irritants is that all of the bosses had the same weakness. They were all some kind of form of like robotic monster anyway, but every one of them had the exact same weakness. There was an orange spot on their back. So you didn't have any other choice but to get in close, hope that they attacked you, hope that you didn't get fucking hit, and then hope that you hit that orange dot to do some actual damage to them. And it was just not, the controls weren't tight enough to justify that kind of gameplay
mechanic. Yeah. It just feels like missed potential with this game. I was so excited for this one
from
what I've seen on it, and I was looking for a really good action shooter, but just the ultra hardcore aspects of it, just, it hurt. It really hurt the game.
It was one of those instances where you want it to be good. It looked like it should be good. The scenery and the world was just absolutely fantastic. That the art direction on the environment, it's good. But the actual gameplay itself just made you too frustrated to want to continue to see those environments. Because you were just like, I'm constantly fighting myself here.
No. Well, overall, $50. What's your official verdict on this one?
I'm going to give it a deny it. And I feel so bad for it. But that's an awful high price tag for a game that's definitely needs way more polish. And just, it's hard for the sake of being hard rather than for being fun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Despite the gripes, I still give it a hesitant try. I think it does have some potential there. I would love to see some updates to the game to make it more fair.
Yeah.
I'm not asking it to give us an easy mode or anything. Just make it more fair to the player. Look,
if they come back and they say, hey, we've got patches for, you know, the stuff that she complained about, I'd try it again. And I would definitely look it back over. I say it all the time. You want to fix that shit? I'll give it another go. I honestly would. But just in its current state, it's just too high of a price to justify.
Yeah. Next game to talk about is called Fossil Hunters, developed by Reptoid Games, published by Smiling Buddha Games. Released September 12th on Xbox One and PS4 for $16.99. Embark on a casual adventure deep underground in search of mysterious artifacts, hidden treasures, and most of all, fossils. If you didn't hear, check out our last episode. We had a chat with Ryan at Reptoid Games about the game. For those who did hear it, give us a quick refresher. Cole, what is this game?
So this is basically, it's kind of a puzzle game, if you will. There's no combat or anything. This is just you picking a character and diving into the world and digging up dinosaur fossils. Once you've got them dug up from the caves or whatever environment you happen to be in, because there are some different ones. Once you've got some dug up, you get to put them together and create your own dinosaur beast and ship them out for a little bit of gold. And it's a fucking blast. It really is. I had so much fun. It is a local co-op game. You can play it alone. You can do fine alone. It's going to get a little too hard in some parts. It's definitely meant to have a co-op partner for. I played it with number one. Eventually, I ended up playing it with number three as well. Number two was not too into it, but she's really peculiar. And it just wasn't something, like, she played it a little with her sisters, but one and three had more fun with this. Number one came home and asked to play this on a school night, and that's the rule. We don't play games on school night. And she was just like, are you sure we can't? Do you need me to help you a little more with it? Just a little.
Please.
So we had so much fun, actually, sitting down and playing this together. One of the best aspects is that, you know, where it is really meant to be played as a group, you find yourself just we spoke about this during the interview too. You just find yourself naturally falling into this routine of going through the levels where one person is digging up the fossils, another is cleaning them off, another is assembling them, and another is protecting your shit from those stupid spiders.
Fucking crawlers. Little bastard.
Yeah, you know, the lava manders are assholes too, for the record. You know, but it was comfortable to play, and everything was so intuitive, and it just made sense to pick it up. And when you held down the buttons, you're like, okay, I know if I press A, it's gonna do this. I know if I press X, it's gonna do this. It didn't need to come up with giant tutorials to tell you how to do every little thing. It was just, it played. And that was so fantastic. Just pick it up and play.
Pick it up, play, and enjoy.
You want to go through a level and you just want to knock out the main objective dinosaur and build what's on the blueprint and go on to the next, you could do that. You wanted to go back and be one of the assholes that tears everything apart until you get 100% and out of the journals, you can do that too. That was us, by the way.
Guilty.
You know, it was easy to pick up and play for a few minutes. It was easy to sit and lose 3 or 4 hours just digging for dinosaur bones and making your own shit. It was just fun. And I think that's one of the most amazing things, because we fuss all the time, like we don't get to play things for entertainment. But this is one of those games that you had fun even though somebody was saying, hey, you have to play this for review.
Yeah, this one wasn't a job to play. This one was just enjoyable.
Yeah, and it was fun to play with the kids. There's an achievement for throwing off so many of the fossils. And I got to where I was working on that achievement, and number three was just fussing at me constantly. Stop throwing those away. We need them for the museum. Mom, don't put that in the pit. Oh. Yeah, and I was just like, at that point, I was getting giddy about getting her mad about it.
How dare you, madam?
The real thing that got her goat was when I threw the golden idol in the pit. Because there's an achievement for that.
Oh, my Lord.
And so I just picked it like we'd found some kind of gold. At this point in the game, there isn't any purpose for the diamonds and the golden items other than to occasionally unlock a pad to go get a journal entry or something. There will be in the future, if you heard the interview. But for right now, they just clutter up your lab. And so I was just randomly throwing shit into the pit just to piss my kids off.
which makes it a win-win all around, really. But 17 yeah. bucks on this one, what is your verdict?
The price seems a little high when you think about what it is, but there are so many levels and so many opportunities to just go in and explore things 100% and get the collectibles that I think it justifies the price, and I give it a buy it.
I agree. A lot of fun, really cute game, good for all ages, kind of like Arcade Islands, bringing that back around. Hashtag family friendly, hashtag all ages.
Yeah. But,
really, really solid game and a lot of fun. So yep, I agree. Next game to talk about is called Anodyne, developed by Epiphany Games and Analgesic Productions. I hate that word. Published by Release September 18th on PS4, September 21st on Xbox One for $9.99. Harking back to 16-bit adventures, Anodyne pits you as young against a weird world inside their own subconscious. Immersed in a moody, dreamlike soundtrack, explore a world full of natural, urban, and abstract environments, solving puzzles and defeating enemies with a broom. Cole, what is this one?
You really do beat shit up with a broom, man. This is I wrote down a big fancy sentence and watch it like not be entirely accurate. 16-bit retro-inspired 2D arcade RPG action adventure. Basically, think old school Zelda.
And yeah, pretty much.
You got it. Yeah, like it's a long-winded way to say, it's Zelda, but it's not exactly Zelda. It's got that aesthetic. It's got that retro aesthetic. And here lately, I've kind of bitched, like, I'm a little tired of seeing games with the old school look just for the sake of having the old school look, and it doesn't add anything to the gameplay. This one, though, it felt right. It fit the gameplay. Everything kind of had that retro vibe to it. It is not as sunshiny as Zelda, though. There's a bit of a surreal, almost a horror aspect to the story here. You play as a character named Young, and you're kind of in a dream state with Young. Maybe a little more nightmare fuelish than dream. But he has his broom and he's being sent on a quest by a literal sage. And your goal is just to get through all the dungeons and tombs, but they're not always dungeony looking. Like there are times where you will be in an abandoned hotel, or there's, you know, a suburb that's just monochromatic and kind of grim. There's a very surreal vibe going on, which fits the whole nightmare thing. But it's, I lost my place in my sentence is what I'm trying to say.
I was going to chime in that even with the more nightmarish, moody dreamscapes to it, I enjoyed that the game still tried to keep a sense of humor to it.
Yeah.
Like you'll talk to someone and he'll be like, you should go enter the cave and do what you must do to progress on your quest. You talk to him again. He's like, you should probably really enter the cave and get in there and do what you got to do. Talk to him one more time. He's like, get in the damn cave.
Yeah. Some of the character interactions were seriously the best part of this game. And actually some of those interactions can change the game. There are multiple endings. And who you do and do not interact with and to what extent can affect your endings. It does play like old school Zelda in that you have not every area is a room, but you kind of just want to use a room based on how it's blocked off for the sake of the screen. Mm-hmm. And you have the different paths where you can go left, right, up, down. Not every path is available from every area, obviously, so it kind of creates this like maze-like map that you're going to be traversing across. You can come and go back and forth. Every room, there's maybe a few areas that don't have some kind of combat involved, but the game doesn't focus too heavily on that combat. You're armed with a fucking broom, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So, and even though it can be upgraded, the combat isn't really the central focus, as a lot of the rooms have puzzles in them. And so it feels more like you should be focused on the puzzles and how they affect the area as opposed to the actual combat itself.
Yeah, the combat honestly feels kind of like an afterthought to me. Like, it's not something that's really required. Like, there's no currency in the game, so you're not killing monsters, grinding for money. It's basically, oh, you're low on health, kill those slimes. They usually drop health.
Yeah. And even then, there were a lot of times where I just would go straight across a room and pay absolutely no attention to the enemies whatsoever. I will say there are some really crazy enemies. Did you make it to the circus level?
No, I didn't.
There's some really crazy enemies. I don't want to spoil anything for you, though.
Okay, don't. I've been so busy with this move this week that I haven't had... Like, I probably played Anodyne more than any other game I played this week, and it's still not enough. But thanks, yeah. BX Latino Heat, for dropping 100 biddies. You were awesome. Gotta give those shout-outs.
Hooray. But back to the review.
Speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks. I think that the puzzles kept things from getting too repetitive. This is kind of a game where there aren't a lot of options because the combat is so afterthought-ish that there's not a lot of option for the gameplay mechanics, and they can become repetitive. But the puzzles kept things fresh enough that I didn't really get frustrated while playing. I was like, I'm just doing the same thing for nothing. You know, so I felt like when I was going through the puzzles and trying to figure out a new puzzle or something, I was like, oh, well, I feel like I accomplished the thing because I made it out of that room alive. Yay. And I can't tell you how many times I fell through holes and didn't make it out of rooms alive because of dumb shit. I do want to say that the checkpoint system was fairly forgiving in this game, and I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, a lot of checkpoints in the game.
Yeah, and I die a lot, so I'm very grateful for a lot of checkpoints. Because look at that, I just fall through holes for no good goddamn reason. Proud or I don't pay attention and I think I'm doing amazing, but I've actually got hit in the ass 74 times and don't realize that my health is down. And then I die and I'm like, how'd that happen? I had a full bar of health.
Proud of you.
Thank goodness for checkpoints. there are collectible cards. I thought that the way the game handled the collectibles and making them visible on the map, you knew if you had something in a room that you hadn't acquired yet, and it made backtracking a lot easier than just where you look at the map and go, holy fuck, it's huge and I have no idea what I missed.
Yeah, especially because there's so many different maps in this game.
Yeah, and there's a ton of collectible cards, and those cards are kind of important because they give you different information on backstories of the NPCs and the enemies themselves. So you don't want to miss out on them, because if you do, you're missing out on some of the lore and the stories. But if you had to find those on your own, you'd be fucked. So again, just as much as I'm grateful for the checkpoint system, I am grateful that the collectibles were easy to keep track of as well. I did have a problem with screen flickering. Did you?
I had some issues where I would be hitting the A button through text boxes and having flickering there.
Yeah, I had that as well. I also had it on the main menu. Like, when I would be flipping through the menu, it would just flicker out. And I was the first time I did it, I thought the game was crashing.
I actually had one hard crash. I wasn't sure if it was just an anomaly on my end or if I triggered something weird, but I did have a hard crash.
I lucked out and didn't have any hard crashes, but I definitely had the flickering and I thought I was going to have a hard crash. So it does have a few minor bugs here and there that need patched out. But gameplay-wise, story-wise, this is something you're going to probably enjoy, especially if you like that retro old-school game type. But the story is probably going to stick with me and haunt me for a long-ass time.
Well, then, $10 on this, what do you think?
$10, I give it a buy it. I think it's a good price for it. I do hope that they fix some of those glitches with the flickering, though, because that's stressful.
Yeah.
But I
agree. I agree. Solid game. Cheap enough that it's absolutely worth picking up as well.
Yep.
All right. Final game to talk about tonight, and you're on your own with this one because I haven't had time to fire it up because of the whole fucking moving thing. But final game to talk about tonight is called Fishing Sim World, developed and published by Dovetail Games, released September 18th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $39.99. Fishing Sim World is the most authentic fishing simulator ever made, taking you around the world on an angling journey like no other. Feel the adrenaline rush of landing a trophy largemouth bass and the thrill of fighting a huge carp and monster pike. I know you were excited as hell for this one, so how is it?
Can I let you in on a little secret, Joe?
Sure.
I love Dovetail Fishing Simulators. Fucking love.
Should I even ask about the game, or do you just want to give it the verdict?
I mean, buy it. You should probably tell you why.
Probably talk about the game.
So, I actually broke my rule and straight up asked you to request this from me, which is something I don't ever do.
I wish you would.
I tend to just take whatever you give me. You message and you go, do you want this? And I go, yeah, sure. You know, because I don't care. I'll play pretty much anything. But I straight up messaged you and was like, I wouldn't be mad if you got this for me. And I'm not mad. I played, people are going to go, Dovetail Fishing. Don't we already have Dovetail Fishing? We do. We had Dovetail Euro Fishing. I had the 1K in that game before the DLC come out. I'm just waiting for the season pass to go on sale, and I will get my completion back in that. So that should already tell you that I'm going into to Fishing Sim World. The name on this one is clunky, guys, but I'm going into Fishing Sim World a little biased because I already enjoy these games. I've got some pretty lofty expectations for this. And they didn't disappoint. There are a few things that they changed from Eurofishing that are important to point out. One is they added boats. That's pretty damn awesome. They're not on every map. There are 7 maps, and I think there are 2, maybe 3, that have boats on them. But you can hop in a boat. You can drive your happy ass all over that lake. The boat has a fish finder on it. And you can actually see, oh yeah, there are fish here and I'm going to have some luck if I cast out from here. Or you can see that this place is as barren as the Sahara Desert and I'm going to get fucked if I put my pole in the water. It was a really neat dynamic, but they also added, on top of fishing, on top of the boats, they added some different fishing mechanics. They do have the true casting, like was in Eurofishing, where you actually have to like, pull your stick back and push your stick forward real fast. And I can't do that shit. I set it to basic. I have arthritis. Sorry. I think it's a fantastic way to play the game. And it really helps with the simulation and the immersion if you can. I just can't. My husband plays it that way and he loves it. I can't do that though. But they added that in. That was still there. But they added in what's called retrieval fishing, where basically you have like spinners and floats and you cast them out and you actually have to use lures to get the fish to bite your hook. So you have to reel in and you can adjust the speed that you're reeling and actually twitch the pole one direction or another to try to lure the fish to you. And then you have to actually hook the fish rather than just like when you're using pussy mode like I do for fishing for carp or catfish where they just bite it and they're there. This one you have to actually watch for the float or the bobber to move and pull it and catch them. Which is fantastic. It's just really fucking hard. But the game does a really good job. It's very efficient at it. It's just not my preferred gameplay method, but I think it's great that they added it. It does add some extra depth to the gameplay. You're not just throwing out and waiting for something to bite. You're actually a little more immersed in it. I wish I knew more about spinners and retrieval fishing to be able to talk about it a little more in depth. I don't, unfortunately. That's beyond my skill set. There are some things that they took out of Eurofishing.
Like what?
In Eurofishing, you have to fight with the fish when you're reeling them in. And there are 18 different species, and every species has its own habits. Like, you can tell what you're going to reel in without even being able to see the fish, just based on how they fight the line. And that stayed true in this one as well. But once you got that fish tired out, and casual, I know. But once you got that fish tired out and got it to the bank or close enough to the bank, you didn't have to wait for it to be completely tired and able to, in order to use the net in Eurofishing and lift it up out of the water and carry on. You don't have that option of just pressing a button to use your net in fishing sim. That is such a complicated name. Fishing Sim World. instead, you have to literally just fight the fish until it gives up and then yank the line back to pull it up onto the dock. It gives you the icon of a net, but at no point is there the option to just press A and pick that bitch up. I wish it did that, because when you're fishing at a peg, you can claim it, you can put three lines out at a time, and you can obviously get bites on all three lines at the same time.
Oh, God. 'Cause
that's shit that can happen. And one of the things is, okay, I'm reeling this fish in. I've got it close to the bank. It's within a quarter, you know, of the top of the water. I should just be able to scoop it up and move on to the next pole that's beeping. But you can't, because it's just not tired enough yet. You have to wait for that icon and then pull it up. And it's just a pain in the ass.
Nice.
Because I was there fighting with one for a little too long. I would like to see them bring back the ability that, hey, you've got it within a certain boundary, it's fine to net it and carry on. One other thing that was changed, I'm trying to read my notes.
Reading is fundamental.
So Eurofishing was limited strictly to Europe. It's in the name. That's where all of the lakes were at, even the DLC ones. This is Fishing Sim World. You can fish all over the world here. Most of the lakes, though, are still more Europe-based. You have some, I think there's one in Germany. There's a couple in UK. But there are also two in the U.S. I'm holding out hope. There is a season pass available, so I'm holding out hope that, like, they expand a little more worldwide when they go for the season pass. The season pass for Eurofishing just had a ton of extra options, even though they were limited to being in Europe. So I'm hoping they just kind of blow the doors off of this one and go, look, you know what? You can fish in Canada. You can fish in Brazil. I want to fish in Australia.
So you just want more locations.
I would love to see more locations. The seven that are there are really good. They're very pretty. I wonder if playing on an S, though, didn't affect my graphics a little bit, because I did have some screen tearing, especially when I was fighting with fish. When you cast out, there's a little marker in the water that points down to where your line is at. And once you've got a fish hooked onto that, you have like a little fish icon, and it moves obviously with the fish as you're fighting with it. So you know, oh, the fish is going left, so I need to pull right and tire it out. There was just like, it was almost like a visual echo, if you will. And it was just very blurred, and it's essentially screen tearing. When you were fighting with the fish, especially if it was like a really close up to the bank, then it seemed to be way worse when it would do it. That needs patched. Absolutely. I don't know if that's a problem on the X like it is, but I had that problem on the S. Another issue is that the water looks incredibly good while it's close to you. Once it gets to a certain point, it just kind of looks like glass. Again, I think this might be a texture because I'm on the S issue, though, as opposed to an actual game issue. I'd like to see some gameplay of people on the X to see if it's the same, but I haven't been able to look that up yet.
This is where I would normally chime in, but I feel like a complete dick that I didn't get a chance to fire it up due to helping my mom move.
I'll try to chime in
next week. I'll try to give it some time over the weekend and just follow up with me.
I will say that there's online multiplayer just as there was before. And it's great. I actually played it online with my husband. He was in the other room. And we were fishing together because that's how you stay married. But we were fishing together and we never had any lag. We never had any major issues. He was playing on the fat Xbox as opposed to me being on the S. The loading times were very similar. It was a smooth experience and I was very happy with it. There are online tournaments. I have not done a tournament yet, though. Online, I did a single player one. It wasn't particularly difficult. I enjoyed it. It's very much like playing the online. If you haven't played Eurofishing and you're like, how the fuck does online fishing work? Basically, you pick a spot around your map and you cast in and you catch what you can. You can set the time limit. It could be 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, all the way up to an hour, or you can do unlimited. So you can just sit there with your buddies and just fish indefinitely and see who catches the most. Basically, the weight of the fish as you reel them in and catch them gets tabulated for you. And so it just keeps a running tab at the top of who has the most in weight. But it's absolutely fun. I enjoy not even just from a competitive aspect. Like, I just enjoy being on the lake digitally with friends. I don't know why. Like, I don't even care if you all get more points than me, more pounds than me. It's just fun to be like, oh, what did you get? Because you can see the other players there with you. And so you can actually, you know, put your pole down and walk over to your buddy and be like, oh, yeah, you got a hell of a fish. That's a cool looking fish. It's got a unique color pattern. Or, oh, you got a trophy fish. So it's really exciting to just be like, exciting is probably not the word a lot of people are going to attach to a fishing game. And that's just my redneck showing. But I thought it was incredibly exciting to just be like, oh, you got a cool one. I haven't seen that color pattern on that species before or whatever. It was just so much fun. It really was.
Nice. Then $40 on this one. What do you think?
Buy it. What's wrong with you? Go fish. Come fish with me. I like to have people fish with me.
What do you say to the people who are worried that $40 might be too much for a fishing game?
I think that they underestimate how much is actually in this game. You have the tournaments. You have the online. You can set up and just play casual free range fishing, which is my favorite way to do it. I don't even like to like fuck with the tournaments and stuff. Just set me on a lake of my choice and let me cast out all day long. Literally the first day that this code hit my Xbox, I already had the achievement for 100 caught fish within like 2 or 3 hours.
Jesus Christ.
I was just having that much fun that it was just, I sat there all night mindlessly catching fish.
Damn.
It's so easy to just relax, put your feet up and play it casually and not sweat it. I played it earlier.
Neglect your family as you catch fish all night.
No, what's a family? What is this that you speak of? I don't understand. All I know is fish.
Nice.
But there's a lot involved. There's hundreds of different items. There's legitimately branded items. You know, when you're picking the rods and stuff that you're going to use and the reels and the line and the bait, there's a lot to learn if you're not already familiar with fishing. And yet it still at the same time tries to make it something that's approachable. Like, I'm kind of fishing dumb. I know how to put a worm on a hook and throw it into the pond and catch something. I know how to do that in real life. But when it comes to a game like this where it's very simulation heavy and you've got to have the right weather and you've got to have the right bait for the type of area that you're casting into. Like, you don't want to put something that's going to sink in the gravel or the silt. You need to use something that's going to float in the weeds. There's a lot to learn, and you're going to spend your time learning and getting better, and you're going to end up spending a lot more time in a game to justify that $40 price tag than you would if you're just like, okay, well, I'm just going to go and play Stardew Valley where I just basically press A. It's not that kind of fishing. It's very simulation heavy.
I immediately regret asking you that question.
I'm sorry.
But sounds like a good game then.
Yeah, I was really happy with it. It was definitely lived up to my expectations.
Okay, I'm cutting you off.
Okay, bye.
No more.
I'm going to go fish now. Bye.
No, we got one last thing to take care of on the show. We're doing a giveaway for Claws of Furry on the PS4. I sent out a call for people to email us about why they wanted the game. We got 5 emails to go through. You ready for this?
Really?
Yep.
But are there any fish in Claws of Furry?
First email's from Aline Haish, who says, hi, I would really like to win one of the games so I could give it to my son. Sounds like a good reason. Guess what? They're getting a code.
Yay!
Next email from...
Is this one of those days where everybody gets a code?
Goddamn right it is.
Yay!
Leon Claymore says, I can't afford Red Dead Redemption 2 or Tomb Raider, but at least I could play Claws of Furry this October. You're goddamn right you can. Because you're getting a copy of the game. Next email from BX Latino Heat, who is hanging out in the chat, who says, good evening to my favorite podcast, the SML Podcast. I was recently given a PS4 as a gift with no games. This game, Claws of Furry, caught my attention because you have to portray a cat in a ninja costume and defend your master from unknown enemies. This game is a unique arcade beat-em-up style, which is up my alley, especially as it has local 4-player co-op, which is super awesome. If I'm lucky, this would be my first actual PS4 game I would own. Thanks so much for the opportunity to claw and beat the crap out of my enemies. Guess what, Latino? You are getting a copy of the game, so you now own a PS4 game.
Put that awful-ass PS4 to use.
Next email from Iris DeMiro, who says, hi, I would like to play Claws of Furry, as I'm always game for a good platformer. Thank you. You're welcome, because you're getting a copy of the game.
Yay!
Final email from Oroto Tomato, who says, ah, yes, long time indeed drifter of the night, but alas, we meet again once more in this little corner of the world, drinking in a bar built on holy ground. Sorry, reading too much Sandman lately. Claws of Furry sounds like something, but it's another something. I'd like a copy for sure. I mean, I love any beat-em-up style game that doesn't require quarters. I'm still haunted by the arcades and their final fights, always getting to the third level and running out of money. Worse yet, when people older and more muscular than me came to the machine pushing me around to take my place in the middle of my game. Have mercy on me. Thankfully, I could play this one in the safety of my house home. Oroto, you can play this one safely in your house home because you are getting a copy of the game.
That was surprisingly devoid of poo.
I love when we have giveaways that everyone just gets a copy.
Right? That's fantastic.
Those are my favorites.
Although, I'm sorry all you fuckers have PS4s.
Oh, come on.
I said it. Deal with it. No.
Oh, come on.
You're the one that said Sony's a dick earlier, so this is my turn.
Sony as a company are dicks. The PS4 has good games, so I can't fault people for having PS4s.
I can. Doesn't make sense for me to, but I can. So I'm prone to the occasional hypocrisy. I'm not above it.
Oh, man. Anyway, that is it for this episode. Thanks again for David for coming on and chatting with us. That was a really, really fun chat.
It really was.
I love having him on. He's a good dude.
That's an insane number of games coming out, though.
That is. So they have
you're hoping
so much.
They get to sleep eventually.
Yeah, hopefully they get sleep, and hopefully I don't lose too much sleep by playing Home Sweet Home in VR.
I can't wait for that shit. Happy Halloween to us!
I was going to ask for final words, but that kind of sounds like him.
That was it. You fucked it up now, though.